talking about quail hunting. I went on a weird hunt last year. I went to South Texas. I'm active in the Navy SEAL Foundation, and I was the hors d'oeuvre. They had a little fundraising thing. They said, $30,000, and you get to go to this fabulous ranch owned by this couple from Philadelphia in South Texas and go bird hunting with Carl Rove and 9 SEALs. And so they had like 10, 15 couples who bought the hunt opportunity, and we went hunting in South Texas. And I didn't know a single one of these people. There were 9 Navy SEALs hunting with me. 1 Navy Cross, 4 Silver Stars, 26 Bronze Stars, and 4 Purple Hearts. 150 years of service between the 9 of them, and 67 foreign deployments in the War on Terror. And I had a hell of a good time. We hunted everything. These guys, yeah, they were amazing shots. So, you know, these guys were dropping, running javelina at 300 yards. I mean, these guys were unbelievable shots. Except when it came to hunting birds. Now, they're used to a 10-gauge shotgun that shoots a spent grating pellet to blow out a door. That's the general thing that they do with a shotgun. So a 20-gauge with a little fluttering bird, they're good, but they're, you know, they can do some more. So we're out there in the field, and there were two SEALs, and I were hunting. And 2 SEALs, we had dogs out there, and the dogs, 2 dogs, one dog goes down over here, 1 dog goes out over there. I said, you guys take those over there. That dog looks really birdy. So they walked up, and the quail flucked, and they shoot 4 shots, 2 shots each, and get 2 birds. Each one of them got a bird. I walk up on the dog over here, and the birds, about 4 or 5 birds flush out, and I pull down on them. And for the second time, only the second time in my life, I shoot 1 time, and there are 2 birds in the cone, and 2 birds go down with 1 shot. And I say to myself, I'm not shooting the second time. I'm not pulling that trigger 1 more time. So I turn around, these 2 Navy SEALs are like, I said, hey, did you get one of those yesterday? But it was a lot of fun. And these guys were extraordinary. At the end of it, the senior master chief came to me and he said, I guess I can tell you this. He pointed out to him and he said, the bottom bag. He just pointed to the 2 guys and said, the bottom bag. That's all he said. Even 2 of these guys have gone on the mission. Get us off of that line. Final day we were there, we had lunch. And they asked one of the guys, who's a retired SEAL, to talk. And a tall guy, really, you know, seemed like a gentle soul. He is retired from the military, and he now works on helping wounded veterans get linked up with all the different kind of service they need to have, not just from the VA, but from private groups. Because a lot of what the military does is one size fits all, and a lot of these vets need specialized assistance, and his job is to find the specialized assistant. So they got up, and they said, we'd like to have a named SEAL give a little talk about his experience, and he got to talk about how he came into doing this. He said, I was wounded, and I came into this kind of activity because I was wounded. They said, well, what happened? And he described it. 2007, he was a couple of weeks, maybe a week or so away from transitioning out. They got word of about 16 to 20 bad guys in Anbar province. And so they sent the SEAL team in with a group of Iraqi scouts to take him out. And this guy leads the team in. And they chop her in about 3 clicks away, drop him. These guys sneak up on the compound where the bad guys are, surround the compound, blow the door on him, and go charging in. One group of Iraqi scouts go charging in and go down a long hallway. And this SEAL and another SEAL and 1 Iraqi scout are there at the main entrance where they've blown the door, facing 2 doors. And they go and kick the door in, kick the left-hand door in, and find themselves in a darkened room, about 16 by 18 feet, with 3 bad guys. 1 guy with a pistol, 2 guys with AK-47, and all hell breaks loose. The other SEAL is immediately killed. The Iraqi goes down shortly after. The remaining SEAL is fighting, shooting with his A4, and his weapon is shot out of his hands. Literally, his weapon is shot out of his hands. So he transitions to his pistol, and he's sitting there fighting it out with 3 bad guys in a darkened room. guy with the pistol on the other side goes to pull a grenade, and the SEAL shoots him, and the guy drops a grenade behind him, and it goes off and blows the Iraqi bad guy across the room and into the SEAL and knocks him against the wall and knocks him unconscious. The other bad guys come over in the darkened room and try to shoot him in the head and make sure he's dead, only it's so dark they can't see his head, so they shoot him in the butt. A couple minutes later, the guy wakes up, realizes these Iraqis are still shooting out the windows, have driven off the strike force, and he's in the room with them. He thinks to himself, maybe I'll play dead and see what happens. And he said, no, that's not a good strategy. So he stood up and re-engages with a pistol only, two guys with AK-47s, and shoots it out with them right there in the room. Kills them both. Tries to connect with his guys on his radio unit. Whenever he pushes his button, all he can get is a dark sound. And then looks down and realizes the entire radio's been shot off. It's entirely covered in blood. Goes over, gets the radio unit on his dead compatriot, connects up with his buddies outside, which is a good thing because they couldn't make connection with him, and they assume that everybody inside the room, inside the building, is dead. They're about ready to call in a C-130 gunship to blow it up. So he gets the other Iraqi scouts who are down in the back of the building, and they all get out and drag out their compatriots. He walks out of the building, and he is just covered in blood, and he's been wounded a lot. And so they say to him, let us carry you to the chopper. And he says, no, don't anybody touch me. He said he hurt so bad that he thought if anybody touched him, he was going to die. So he walks to the chopper, gets on the chopper. The medic takes one look at him and starts cutting off every piece of clothing. By the time, 20 minutes later, he gets to the base, he literally is naked except for his boots. He's got so many wounds that the guys could cut every piece of clothing away in order to staunch the wounds. The guy's chest and back are completely black and blue because he's taken so many rounds to his body armor that it's just he's got broken ribs and is completely bruised. They get to the base, he gets off, they try to put him in what's called an Israeli lyric. He just sort of flap it like this and it locks into place. Well, it won't lock into place, so he gets so irritated, he's hurt so bad, he gets up and walks over to a golf cart, sits down in a golf cart and says, somebody take me the hell to the base hospital. He's wounded 16 times, shrapnel and bullets. 24 hours later, he is in Germany, and a day after that, he's in Bethesda, Maine. And, I mean, it was an awesome, unbelievable story, because it was like monotone. It's like the guy was describing going to the shopping trip to the Home Depot. And I remember when he finished, people were just shocked. And somebody said, I thought it was a goofy question, but it really wasn't. He said, what did you learn? Don't go into a firefight. The guy said, I learned compassion. He said, I was a hard ass before this happened. He said, I was hard on myself. I was hard on my teammates. Worst of all, he said, I was hard on my family. He said, what I learned was compassion. And he said, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because he said, I feel this is the greatest and highest calling for me. I was like completely blown away. Afterwards, I was talking to the Master Chief about it, and he said, that's not all the story. He said, when he got out of Bethesda and it was recuperating, they said, we want you to sign up for one more tour of duty. We want you to re-enlist. Because you're so good, we want you to be part of what's called the Special Development Group that helps the Navy SEALs figure out tactics and weapons and so forth. He said, we won't send you into combat, we won't send you to deploy you abroad, but you've got talents and skills and abilities that we'd like to make use of. Will you consider one more tour of duty? The Master Chief said, this SEAL says to him, let me think about it. He comes back and says, okay, I'll do it with one provision. The provision is this. Since you're not going to send me back into combat, I want you to allow me to forego the signing notice that I get for having one more tour of duty. I don't feel it's right. I'm not going to go back into combat. How can you not be optimistic about a country that grows people like that? If given a chance, we can overcome anything. You overcome it. You overcome the physical difficulties of drilling thousands of feet under the surface for hydrocarbons. He's overcoming it by finding a way, after serving in a ghastly way like that, to serve something bigger than himself. Find others who have gone through the experience he went through and help them navigate their way of life. There are people like that all across this country. And a country that is great and powerful and strong and full of people like that is us can overcome anything. That's why I think we will. Thanks for having me here today.